Weekend Huddle, second hour right here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you on this fine Saturday morning. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Great first hour. Talked a lot of Titans, talked a lot of Brian Callahan. Talked about my personal beef with Charlie Baker and the NCAA for scheduling 8 different games that I want to watch at 6:30 tonight. Not 8, but it's a good chunk. So, as we do in the second hour, the first segment of the second hour every week, we get to your poll question. Our poll question this week, brought to you by us. Who has the best traditional helmet in all of college football? Your options were as follows. Notre Dame, the golden domes of the Fighting Irish. Michigan, the winged navy and maize helmets, which apparently they stole from Delaware. The hen den, as Parker calls it. And Alabama, the Crimson Tide, the classic crimson helmets with white stripes and numbers. Or other. And if you say other, I expect you to either call in or text us, 615-737-1025. Our phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, to explain yourself. Nick Frazier, I want to start with you because I see you have quote tweeted, with a different helmet, no questions asked. Please elaborate.
No questions asked, it's Penn State. Penn State, probably the most traditional helmet on planet Earth. The blue face mask, white helmet with a blue stripe down the middle. It doesn't get as classic as that. I think that's at its purest form. I think white helmets are clean, they're sleek, they're everything college football should be. It compensates the uniforms well because they don't have any names on the back of their uniforms. It's just the jersey block numbers and a blue jersey or a white jersey, and they keep the white pants. Now, I do remember Penn State doing the alternative uniforms where it had the name on the back one year with James Franklin. I think it was his first or second year there. And then he had like the block numbers on the helmet. I thought that was okay, but I'm sticking with traditional. I think when you look at Penn State and you think of their white helmets, it makes you think of, and nonetheless, all this is with an asterisk, but
yeah,
Joe Paterno days, of all the national titles they had. I just think those are the glory days of Penn State. And I think, I wouldn't say Penn State's out of their glory days now. I mean, James Franklin is still a good coach. He puts together a good program, but they just can't win the big one. So we'll see what happens. But overall, that's my pick, Penn State's helmets.
I should probably reveal the results. This poll will continue towards the end of the show. Through 40 votes right now, Alabama leads the pack. 30.6% of voters are showing their Southern bias in voting for the Crimson Tide. In second is other. However, none of you have explained what other is. So that could be Ohio State, it could be Penn State, it could be Texas, it could be anyone. Tied for third, and I guess last, is Notre Dame and Michigan. Now, if I were to have to pick, Notre Dame would be my answer. I love the shiny golden domes of the Fighting Irish. It's iconic. You see it with they have the green light behind them when they come out. Here come the Irish of Notre Dame with the blue top, the gold bottoms. It's iconic. So Notre Dame would be my pick. Parker Kelly, what is your pick?
Notre Dame is the answer for me as well, because there's nothing like the gold shiny chrome of Notre Dame.
Yep.
And when I think of traditional college football, I think of the movie Rudy. And
yeah,
where did Rudy play? Notre Dame. Notre Dame is the answer for me. Penn State was also a good one.
Yeah.
I think of Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, Bama, Penn State. Or I already said Penn State. Those are the five teams I think of when I think of traditional college football helmets.
Yeah. I wanted to throw LSU in there too, because I love LSU's helmet, the gold with the LSU on the top, and then it has the Tiger logo. I think it's awesome. I really like Florida's orange helmets too. And not exactly traditional, but I really like those helmets. Ohio State is the other one that comes to mind for me. If you watch the Ohio State game today, the crowd is actually pattering the striped helmet. Like, most of the crowd is wearing silver. And then in the south end zone, I believe, they're going to wear the stripe. So some will be in red, some will be in black, some will be in white. It's going to be awesome. And Ohio State's one of those helmets that just gets more iconic as the year goes on, as they add the Buckeye leaves. I'd like for an Ohio State fan to text in and explain to us how those Buckeye leaves exactly work, because I know they get points for something, but
it's like defense and offensive, you know, accomplishments.
Yeah,
I think every university has stuff like that. I know, was it Samford, the Bulldogs?
Ask Joe.
Yeah, that's a big Joe question right there.
There's one team that's a Bulldog. It might be Georgia. I'm not too sure, but they have like those little bones on the back of their helmets, and they just kind of go up like the back.
There's a lot of teams that do that. Pitt does it. They have the Panther logo. Clemson does it. Michigan does it on some level. North Carolina did do it. I don't know if they're going to do it this year, but they did do it with the foot logo. So there's a lot of teams across the nation that do it, but Ohio State is the most iconic that does it.
Yeah, they are. I know in high school we used to do the shamrock and put it on the back.
Did you?
Yeah, it was Irish, you know.
JP2 does it right now. They do the they put shields on there.
That's pretty cool.
We did that at DCA, now that I think about it. It wasn't until we didn't get a lot of them, but we did it a little bit.
Did you get them for offensive masterclasses?
Yes, all of them. all 10 games that we played in the regular season were offensive masterclasses. So we got 10.
I'm so glad that Coach Pierce brought that up, because I just said it completely unintentional. I was like, Coach, you guys put on an offensive masterclass tonight. Talk to us about how your offense was clicking. And he's like, hey, that's a great word. I've never heard that one before.
He told me the assistant coaches were laughing in the background after they heard that.
I told him, I was like, Coach, go ask your players. I guarantee you a lot of them use that word. It's just a youthful term. It's something that they use. We should have asked our friend Drew if he uses that term. But I'm trying to think of other – I mean, I hate to say it, but you could throw Tennessee in this conversation. The white with the orange power T, white face mask. It's a cool helmet. Hate to say it.
You think they'll ever bring back the orange helmet with the white tee?
I hate the orange helmet.
Yeah. I personally wouldn't mind seeing it, because I'm not a superstitious person.
It's so very...
I understand what happened the last time Tennessee wore those helmets, but I'm not superstitious.
It's very split, and I have a lot of Vols friends that hate the orange helmet specifically because of the superstition that it provides. Last time they wore it was against South Carolina. In Columbia, when Hendon Hooker tore his ACL. Superstition. That said, when I look at that helmet, I just don't like how it looks. It takes away from the tradition, and I realize I can contradict myself by saying I think Tennessee's all black is awesome. But I just don't like the orange. It doesn't look good.
Yeah, it's fair. I think if there's another team out there in college football that has a nice helmet, traditionally... I try to lean away from the white helmets, but there's something about
Tejas.
Yeah, there's something about that. There's something about Texas.
It's the Longhorn logo that does it for me.
I don't know if it's the white on white combo with the white face mask, white helmet.
White on white is just a lethal combo. Like, it looks good every time. Now, I mean, Penn State has white on navy, so they have the navy face mask, and it looks good. But Texas has the white on white. Tennessee has the white on white. Auburn sometimes wears the white on white, and it looks awesome. In the NFL, the Bills do it, and it looks awesome. I always wanted the Titans to do it, and they never did, because they would, when they had the white helmet, it was a navy face mask. Yeah. They should do white. When we get new uniforms, do either a red face mask or a white face mask.
Stormtrooper it up.
Oh my God, Stormtroopers. Kentucky will do it sometimes too. They'll when they wear all white, they'll wear the white face mask, and it looks remarkable.
Back in the day when Mississippi State, it was during the Dak Prescott era, like right before he got there, they called the Texas A&M and Mississippi State game the Snow Bowl, which made no sense, I guess. Well, I understand why. There's a long lineage of, you know, they played in the snow in, like, I think September or something. But Mississippi State wore all white uniforms at home.
Yeah.
And it was Johnny Manziel's sophomore year, so it was Heisman year.
Yeah.
And he wore all black. A&M's jerseys that year were sweet. But Mississippi State had
because they had the they had the stripes on the shoulders.
Yes.
I miss those. Those were awesome. Yeah. Back when they were with Nike, think. Were they with
both
Adidas?
Were Adidas. Yeah. Mississippi State had like this silver. It was actually this model, actually.
Yeah.
It was this right here. It was silver and white.
Silver pants. Side statement. Silver pants always look good. Like Mississippi State will wear it sometimes with the maroon tops and the gray pants. It looks phenomenal. Ohio State, of course, does it. You have a lot of teams around the nation that do it. Let's get to some of your texts. Huffy and Dixon on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I like the Nebraska helmet. The Netflix helmet, as I call it. It looks like the Netflix N. But I agree with you, Huffy. I do like Nebraska's helmet. I like Nebraska's jerseys. I'll show my nerdism for a little bit. In the new game, they've updated a lot of jerseys, and they put Nebraska's black shirts uniforms in there, which is a black top and black bottoms with red stitching, and it has the skull and crossbones logo on it and a white helmet, but instead of the red end, it's black. It looks awesome.
Really?
It's super cool. Nebraska's an underrated program. I wish they would be good again. Hopefully Matt Rhule can get them going.
Hopefully Mahomes Jr. can get them back to relevancy. God.
You know the Matt Rhule year three rule, right?
No, explain.
So it goes back to his Temple days, but in Temple, they were 1-11 his first year, and he turned them around in year three and got them to national relevancy. Do you remember that game they played? They actually hosted Notre Dame, and game day was there. I believe it was when DeShone Kizer was the starter.
DeShone Kizer.
Yeah.
Green Bay legend.
Then he went to Baylor. They were 1-11 his first year, and by year three, they were 11-and they won the Big 12, 11-2, and they I think they played Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Now year three at Nebraska, high expectations. Some are predicting them to make the playoffs. I'm not that bold.
Yeah,
but it's worked out. It's worked out where he's been. So we'll have to see how it pans out.
Well, speaking of helmets, they're showing Oregon right now. Oregon's wearing the throwback yellow helmets. They look fantastic. Non-traditional helmet, but Oregon, I mean, you can always count on them to have a sweet, sweet helmet.
Bold option for the green face mask.
Yeah, look like the Packers.
A little bit.
Kind of. I would have gone gold face mask. Just commit. Just go with it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to take your answers on the best helmet. I guess we're just broadening to our helmets. Best traditional helmet in college football today. Again, Alabama leads the poll right now by 30, or they are ahead with 30.6%. But you can continue to vote. That poll will continue on throughout the show. But coming up next, we'll stick with college football. There are two very big games for our two local teams here in Tennessee. Vanderbilt headed to Columbia to take on South Carolina. And, of course, Tennessee defending the home turf in Neyland against the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll break both of those games down. Coming up next, right here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game. Heading to the Titans game tomorrow, be sure to stop by John Bon Jovi's before the Titans take on the Rams for the 102.5 The Game pregame show with Big Joe Dubin, Derek Mason, and Chris Sanders from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Pregame show is brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Old National Bank, Circus Sportsbook Kentucky, and Tennessee Brew Works. Welcome back in. Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game on this beautiful Saturday morning. Beautiful day out.
It is.
It's going to be hot, but not a cloud in the sky. Sun is shining. And the sun is shining on two local programs here in the state of Tennessee on this beautiful college football day. But real quick, there is a text on the helmet front that I want to get into from Wesson Hermitage on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. He says, quote, "As much as I hear y'all on the traditional uniforms and white-on-white uniforms, when I watched the Packers play the other night, I was disgusted by those jerseys. White on white on white for Green Bay, in my opinion, is not a good look at all and looks gross."
Horrid.
Which I agree.
Horrid.
It was terrible. "I much prefer the brighter and darker colors over white. And man, oh man, I hate all white helmets." Not white. All white helmets. He also says, "I would love to see the Titans in a Columbia blue jersey with a candy red helmet." I don't know how I feel about a red helmet for the Titans. I think they would. I kind of want to see the oil Derek helmet.
Yeah.
But to your point, Wes, Parker and I texted Robbie Stanley about this, or we tweeted at him about it. Horrible, horrible uniform combination for the Green Bay Packers.
Here's the deal. I liked it.
Really?
I do. I like the white on white combo for the Packers. The only issue is don't do it for the first, I guess, primetime game of the year. I get it. It's like color rushing a roundabout way. You're kind of pleasing all the eyeballs out there, but You got, if you're playing in Lambeau Field, you got to wear your traditional Wisconsin cheddar yellow.
Yep, that's exact hat. See, to me, if you are playing in Lambeau Field, you have to wear gold, green, gold, because that is the tradition. That's the Green Bay Packers, and it looks phenomenal. And even on the road, you wear gold, the white jersey, and the gold pants. I'm very traditional when it comes to this.
Did that violate your Newt's rule of fandom or jerseys or whatever? Didn't you have a you said you hate when teams wear white at home.
Yeah, in, Newt's in rule football. Book of fandom.
Yeah, I mean, there are some exceptions. Like LSU does it, and I get that.
The Cowboys
do it. Georgia Tech does it. There are some exceptions, but I don't want to see Tennessee wearing white at home. I don't want to see Green Bay wearing white at home. But enough jersey talk. Let's talk about actual football. Vanderbilt headed to Columbia today to take on the Gamecocks of South Carolina. There's a lot riding on this one if you think about it. Vanderbilt, the line has gone down significantly. Started out as an 8-point dog. Now, last I looked, the line, 2.5 in favor of the Gamecocks. Gamecocks are minus 2.5-point favorites. I don't know, man. I've just got a feeling that Clark Lea and Diego Pavia are going to go into this one and come out victorious because they've done it so far. And I heard Jake Lyman talking about this earlier in this week. Vanderbilt is collecting these anthems. Like, they've taken down Virginia Tech. They now claim Enter Sandman. I just feel like they're going to go in and collect Sandstorm from the Gamecocks. And I feel like the underdog is going to prevail today.
I'm right there with you,
Kyle. Yeah,
I really am. This Vanderbilt team, and I was, again, our I guess not ombudsman's, but our side guy, you know, Jake Lyman.
He's
well-versed with Vanderbilt. I was talking to him. I was like, you know, man, this is a really good, I guess, precursor going into South Carolina. We're talking about Virginia Tech because Kyron Jones is like the Dollar General version of
Will Levis.
Will Levis, but I would say more of Lenore Sellers. Just
yeah,
to have
that's true.
Similar play arts where they can have design runs, throw the ball. And honestly, Vanderbilt did a good job of eliminating Kyron Jones' run game a little bit. And if Vandy can do that with Lenore Sellers and take away that to those design runs, I think they have a really good shot at being South Carolina on the road. It's a tough environment, but if you can go into Virginia Tech and win handedly like that, why not, right? Why not?
I just got a feeling, man. Like, Diego Pavia thrives in these situations from what I've seen. Thrived against Alabama. Granted, that was at home, but they were massive underdogs. Played well against Texas. They didn't win that game, but he played well and almost beat Texas last year. LSU, they hung with them for a little bit. And then this year, they go out and just dominate Virginia Tech, who they were underdogs in. They play well as the underdog, especially on the road. And look, Columbia is a tough environment. I've never been there. I'd like to go there. I want to complete the SEC World Tour. That's what I want to do. I'm 4 stadiums in, about to be 5 late October.
What is the 5th?
The Croak.
Ooh, okay.
Commonwealth Stadium, baby.
The Croak.
The Croak.
The Croak. I've never heard it. Someone call it the Croak.
I'm headed down to a it's a joke. I'm headed down to Lexington to watch the Vols beat up on my Cats. But regardless, it'll be a fun time. The other ones I've gone to, this is such a tangent. Vanderbilt, of course, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Bryant Denny, Alabama.
Really?
Bryant Denny's
That's
awesome.
A good one.
Bryant
That's
Denny's
one.
Awesome.
I want to go between the hedges at some point.
It's awesome. I was there for MTSU a couple years ago. It was actually, we didn't know it at the time, but it was Nick Saban's last home opener. So that was really cool. I have that forever. But back on the Vanderbilt front, they thrive in these situations in these tough environments. Like, I just feel like South Carolina hasn't shown much to this point to make me believe they are as advertised. Lenore Sellers has kind of struggled as of late. And look, they could very well go out there and put on a dominant performance and just blow out Vanderbilt. But I got a gut feeling that Vanderbilt's just going to walk away with a win today.
Yeah. With this, they both have a common opponent in Virginia Tech. And Vanderbilt beat up on Virginia Tech last week, outgained them by 300 yards in the second half, emptied out Lane Stadium. And then you have South Carolina, who only beat Virginia Tech 24-11 and have yet to get Lenore Sellers going to the level that they would hope. My heart is telling me South Carolina, but it won't be by much. I am picking South Carolina to win this game. I reserve the right to be wrong just in case I am. But I'm picking South Carolina.
Yeah, I'm with Connor on this. Vanderbilt, I think, gets it done today. And, you know, one thing I did not mention is that MK Young, his name is McKylan Young.
Yeah.
Jake Lyman said they call him MK.
MK!
This dude is one of those guys that Pavia, you know, reiterated in, you know, SEC media days that he's one of the New Mexico State transfers. Mm. Didn't play last season. And maybe he's a late bloomer, but having 8 carries for 95 yards against Virginia Tech, you now have a two-headed monster at the running back position between Cedric Alexander and MK.
I love me some Cedric Alexander.
Yeah, that dude's good.
He's electric.
If you can ground and pound with Alexander and then just take the top off the defense by, you know, out of the backfield running the ball or throwing it out of the backfield, whatever, there you go, MK Young.
And the offensive line for Vanderbilt, not built like Vanderbilt offensive lines in the past. Those are some big boys up front. So if they get that run game going, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for South Carolina.
If only they had Pat Coogan on their offense.
That's right.
Line.
They don't have Pat Coogan.
The other game locally, of course, is going to kick off at about 3:30. College game day is there right now in Knoxville. Tennessee and Georgia in Neyland. I've kind of come around. Yesterday I was like, oh, Georgia's going to blow out Tennessee. Oh, blah, blah. I've kind of, you know, lowered my expectations, reeled it back in, and thought environment is going to play a factor into this one, right? Neyland is a tough environment. Tennessee's a good team. Georgia's a good team. On paper, I still think Georgia's the better team. I think Georgia wins this one, but I don't think it's going to be a major blow. I think it's going to be close. I could see it being like a 28-24 kind of game. I know yesterday I came out and said, oh my God, Tennessee's so overrated and blah, blah, blah. And I still believe that to a T. I think Tennessee is generating a lot of hype in the area because they've won 2 games in a row against teams that they're better than. And Georgia has too. Look, Austin Peay is not as good as Georgia is. And they struggled against Austin Peay last week. But I just think when you compare apples to apples, you compare the running backs, your cousin Nate Frazier on Georgia compared to the Tennessee running backs, I just think that plays a factor. Defense is going to be a key here. And look, Tennessee's got some key inactives. Jermaine McCoy is out. Ricky Gibson's out. David Sanders on the offensive line is out. So they've got some depth issues going into this one. I just like my gut feeling for Vanderbilt. My gut feels that Georgia's going to pull this one out.
Yeah, I'll refrain from mine. I'll let Parker go. Go ahead, Parker, because this is Tennessee's game.
Man, let me tell you what. I usually like to stick to my own opinions, but I was hearing Joe Rexroad yesterday on Robbie and Rexroad. He was doing some unthinkable things to my mental for this game. He was getting me fired up in ways I didn't know I could get fired up, okay?
Coach Joe?
Here's the thing.
Should we get him a visor?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I picked Georgia to win this game by a field goal. I think it is going to be very, very close. Here's the thing about this. Georgia has not looked good their first 2 weeks. They have yet to utilize the tight ends the way that Georgia typically utilizes their tight ends. Joey Aguilar has been running this offense much better than I've seen Joe Milton operate it, much better than Nico has operated it. I'd rather pick Kirby Smart and be wrong than pick against him and be wrong. So I think Kirby Smart and Georgia, they're just going to find a way to win, unfortunately, and they win by a field goal.
Wow. Okay, I think we're all on Georgia then. I thought he was going Tennessee.
Is this the part where you say, Georgia's going to blast Tennessee?
Ask me at the end of the show. I may switch my opinion.
See,
this is a pick'em for me.
Connor does lean the way I just said there. He kind of just gave away a little. I do think Georgia's going to win this game in the second half. I think the first half, Tennessee's going to be leading at halftime. I really do.
Really?
I think the atmosphere.
I can see that.
Yeah, atmosphere is going to play a factor into this. I think Aguilar's going to be slinging the ball a little bit to the point where, you know, maybe Tennessee's wide receivers show up, and maybe that's the defining factor. But I think overall Georgia wins this game. I don't think it's close in the second half. I think Tennessee leads at halftime by either 3 to 7 points, a one-possession game. And then the second half, I think Georgia starts running the ball a little bit, wearing down Tennessee's defense, and then just takes the top off by throwing a deep one.
Yeah, I think we're kind of feeling the same way. I've come back down to earth a little bit. We're not doing the, I didn't fully say it yesterday, but I'm not doing the, Georgia's just so much better. Oh my God, they're going to blow them out. I think it's going to be close, but I just think talent's going to take over.
Here will be the difference. If Tennessee can connect on some deep balls, at least two or three.
Yeah.
I think that they can win this game if they do that. But that has to happen.
Yeah.
They'll run the ball, but they have to connect on deep balls.
Oh, they're going to run the ball. That's the Josh Heupel system. But you're right. If you connect on some of those deep balls, momentum swings your way, energy swings your way, and that's the path to victory.
And that's what he's right about that. I think that's going to happen in the first half. I think Tennessee's going to be slinging the rock pretty good for the most
part. Crowd will be into it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Georgia, take the crowd out.
Yeah.
They won't be a non-factor.
Yeah. And so that's why I think Georgia's just going to ground and pound second half and just really wear down that Tennessee defense. I mean, you're without two starting defensive backs, Jermaud McCoy and
Ricky Gibson.
Ricky Gibson, thank you. I just
also have some injuries along the interior defensive line, so that's something to look out for as well.
Yeah, depth's going to play a factor here. And David Sanders, the true freshman, he was the guy that committed on Pat McAfee's show to Tennessee, and everyone thought he was going to defect to Colorado, and he committed to Tennessee anyway. He is out today. So, going to be interesting to see how depth plays a factor into the Tennessee-Georgia game. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You can text or call us. Your thoughts on today's matchups, Vanderbilt in South Carolina, and, of course, Tennessee in Georgia. When we come back, we'll get into the other 18 matchups that kick off all at 6:30 tonight. This is the Weekend Huddle. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly here with you on this Saturday morning on 102.5 The Game. This is the song that's going to be playing in our ears tomorrow at noon when you watch the Titans take on the Los Angeles Rams. Weekend Huddle brought to you by LPL Financial. Wealth management advice for you no matter your current situation or stage in life. Coming up after us at 11 a.m., it's Wisconsin versus Alabama for the college football game of the week on 102.5 The Game, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circa Sportsbook Kentucky. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in Weekend Huddle. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly here with you on this beautiful Saturday morning. A great day to play some football. So we've kind of talked about the two local teams playing today, both in respective big games. Let's talk about the other 36 matchups that all happen to play at 6:30 p.m., which is a personal beef. Not actually, but there are two in particular that I want to focus in on. Texas A&M at Notre Dame. They had two South Bend and an underrated quarterback matchup, if you ask me. Marcel Reed for A&M versus C.J. Carr for Notre Dame. And then, of course, Florida heading to Death Valley to take on the Bayou Bengals in the LSU Tigers. Texas A&M, we'll start with that one. I think Texas A&M's a playoff team. I think they're that good. That said, Notre Dame is coming off of a loss and then a bye week. They are well-rested, and they've had 2 weeks to let a loss boil over in their brains. They're pissed off. I just feel like this is going to be a Fighting Irish game.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I think
that.
This is going to be low scoring, too. Kind of like last year.
Yeah, I'm a little worried from an A&M standpoint. If you look at your quarterback, Marcel Reed, obviously listening to Pete Thamel and looking on his Twitter, I didn't understand this report. He goes, yeah, Marcel Reed was a full participant this week in practice. They thought he was injured, but he's not. Like, that's essentially what he said. And I'm just like, if he's good to go, then why report about it?
Right.
That's what I was – I don't know, Parker, I don't know if you heard that or not, but, like, Pete Thamel was saying that, oh, yeah, Marcel Reed – maybe was dinged up, but he was good to go this week, and he'll be good to go tonight. I'm just like, don't report that. That's just, there's no need for that at all. So
come on, Pete. So be better.
If there is something,
the authority, Pete Thamel.
If there's something going on with Marcel Reed, then I'd be concerned if I'm an A&M fan. But if he's healthy, I don't see why A&M wouldn't win this game.
Really?
Yeah.
I just think home environment's going to play a factor. Notre Dame's got a mentality. Not to say their backs are against the wall, but I feel like if they lose this game, they are on the playoff bubble at the very least.
Notre Dame?
Yeah. Like, this is the downside of not being in a conference. You don't have a conference championship to bail you out. You lose 1 to 2 games, you're on the bubble, 2 being the absolute maximum amount of games you can lose. If you go 9-3, you're out. Mm-hmm. You're not making the college football playoff. So I think backs against the wall for Notre Dame. And I think they feed Jeremiah Love a little bit more. That was my problem with them against Miami, is he had like 10 carries for 29 yards. It was bad. They would not feed him the ball, and he's their best player. So I think Notre Dame is going to kind of change some things. Marcus Freeman's a good coach. I like Marcus Freeman. I like Mike Elko on the other side.
Yeah.
And look, I think A&M is a sneaky playoff team. I think they can squeeze in at like the 10 through 12 range. But I just think today is the Fighting Irish's day.
I do as well. I think this is interesting because these are two teams who basically play the same style of football. They love to run the football. They love to play good defense, and occasionally they'll have their quarterback hit you for a vertical pass down the field. I think Notre Dame has their backs against the wall. They had an extra week of preparation for this game. It's at home. Marcus Freeman is going to get those guys fired up. I think it was interesting because Mike Elko, last year when they lost their bowl game to USC, said that they were not going to get beat on defense. So I think it really boils down to the offense of Texas A&M. Is Marcel Reed going to be able to kill you through the air? They're going to run the football, but is he going to make the pass plays when needed? I struggle to believe that that is going to happen. Give me the Fighting Irish.
The other matchup later tonight is Kentucky and Eastern Michigan. I'm just kidding. I think we know how that one is going to go. At least we hope. Florida is heading to Death Valley to take on LSU. It's funny, I asked Trey Wallace yesterday, who was great, by the way. I want to talk to that guy all day about everything ever. I asked him yesterday, what does a loss mean for both teams' coaches? Billy Napier coming off of a loss to USF. I think the hot seat is hotter than ever for Billy Napier. If he goes out and loses this game, I think you're probably done with him.
Yeah.
He'll finish the season, but I think you're probably done. Really?
Uh-uh. Yeah, they're going to get rid of him in the middle of the season.
Mm.
I think the longer you keep Billy Napier around, the worse it is for DJ Lagway.
I think you're
hurting a young quarterback in that system. And I'm sure you heard Billy Napier say this in his post-game press conference. Someone asked him, are you still going to be the play caller? He goes, absolutely, I'm still calling the plays.
You want to talk about someone stuck in their ways, mm-hmm. coaching-wise. Billy Sunbelt Billy is your guy.
That's a good, I have to remember that one, Sunbelt Billy.
But on the other side, Brian Kelly, that's another guy stuck in his ways. Brian Kelly, I would expect them to win this game because I think they're a lot better than Florida talent-wise, but I'm still not in on LSU. I think they're going to go out and go 10-2, 9-3. Maybe they'll make the playoff, but I don't think they're going to do much. And at this point in Brian Kelly's tenure at LSU, it's championship or bust. And Brian Kelly, throughout his entire career, has proven to be the guy that can't bring home the big one and can't win the big games. This is a big game tonight. They're favored. They're going to win, I think. Playing at home at night. Florida's struggling. But as we get further into the season, and you see LSU playing SEC competition, like Alabama, and I think they play Auburn at some point, who's Auburn is supposedly pretty good now. Teams like that, Georgia, then I think you can kind of see that Brian Kelly is just same old Brian Kelly. And it's never going to be his fault because he has John Calipari syndrome.
That's so funny you brought that up because after their win last week versus Louisiana Tech, they only scored 23, won the game 23-7.
Slammed his assistant coaches.
Yeah, after the post game, just slamming his assistant coaches in typical John Calipari fashion. And then you look over to Florida's side, and after their loss versus USF, they're not going to change anything.
It's
just two different styles right there. But I'm going to give the edge to – I think this is going to be a dogfight because Florida, wounded animal mode. You have LSU who's at home, Death Valley at night. That's not something you want to mess around with. I think LSU is going to win the game.
I would pick LSU as well.
Yeah. The logical pick is LSU. Something is telling me Florida might upset the apple cart.
Are you hungry?
I am a little hungry. I'm drinking coffee, yeah. But Billy Napier with his back against the wall saying, I'm still the play caller. I want to still prove that I am the coach of Florida University. Maybe they don't win. Maybe it's like a 3-point game they lose by. But then that's only going to make Florida fans mad. But it's going to show people like Scott Strickland, who's the AD, he only lost by 3. He is our guy still. We're going to let this play out another week.
He was competitive with the number 3 team in the nation.
Yeah, see.
There you go, Billy.
And we don't know how good LSU really is. I think that game last week against Louisiana Tech, to me, didn't prove anything.
I think they were looking ahead to this week, thinking this would be a ranked matchup. And then, obviously, some bet Billy and the Gators go out and crap the bed against USF. But USF's got a big game today, too, against Miami. Don't really have time to talk about that one, but Miami's going to kick their teeth in, I think.
They're going to pants them on national television? On the CW network?
Right after
CW, baby.
Right after, as Jake Lyman puts it, reruns of Gossip Girl and One Tree Hill. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Last call for phone calls and texts. If you want to give your thoughts on Brian Callahan, college football, whatever you want to talk about, we will do it. But coming up next, as we wrap up every show each and every week on Saturdays, it's Where Are They Now? The victorious Nick Frazier. For maybe, what is this, like your second time hosting for actually being victorious?
Second time hosting, first time victor.
Ah.
Yes.
The first time victor, Nick Frazier, will host Where Are They Now? Parker Kelly and I will go head to head, and that's coming up next right here on the Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds take on Gwinnett at First Horizon Park with the first pitch at 6:35 p.m. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Let me also tell you that the Commodores will face ranked South Carolina tonight. Pregame starts at 5 p.m. on 102.5 The Game, and kickoff is at 6:45. Vanderbilt football brought to you by Gary Force Acura, Jim Kelly's Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops. Appropriate that you play that song, as coming up right after us is our game of the week, Alabama hosting the Wisconsin Badgers. But as we wrap things up here on this Saturday morning to get you set for football, we play the original, the first ever, Where Are They Now? Copyright 102.5 The Game. You will be receiving a cease and desist in the mail, Tennessee Titans. Reminder of the rules. Nick Frazier is going to host. He has five athletes and or coaches. We will have to tell him where they are now. The first three are in North America. That's the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And the last two can be anywhere throughout the world. It's 1 point for specific league and 2 points for the specific team. In the event of a tiebreaker, Nick Frazier will provide a career path of a respective athlete. Our job, Parker Kelly and I, will be to name that player.
And before we start, I just got very unfortunate news on my old iPhone here. I have a friend that has been roped into a fall wedding today.
Oh my God.
One of the worst times to do it. Very selfish mood on behalf of
very
the bride.
Selfish move.
And just RIP to him real quick.
I mean, prayers are up. That's truly, truly a national tragedy. And I can't say enough how disappointed I am in that bride. What a selfish decision. But with that, we play Where Are They Now? Hit it. Nick Frazier, take it away, my friend.
Thank you very much. First on the list, I'll give you a little bit of an easy one. Baseball player in North America.
Okay.
And let's say he is an American, so we'll go there. Pitcher Shane Bieber. He's been in the league for a long time. Where is Shane Bieber?
Oh, I think I know where Shane Bieber is, but I don't know if he got traded since then. But I'll stick with my gut. He is in the MLB, playing for the Cleveland Guardians.
Okay.
He is in the MLB for the Chicago Cubs.
Both of you get a point. He is not playing for the Guardians and not playing for the Cubs.
Is it Toronto Blue Jays?
The Toronto Blue Jays.
I swear.
Jays.
I yep. knew it.
This year was the year he went to the Blue
I
Jays.
I knew it.
All right, you both have a point there. All right, next on the list, Nashville's very own. Went to Ravenwood High School. Chris Rowland. Where is Chris Rowland playing today? Where is he now? Football player to
Football
be
Football player. Where do you play college?
It's TSU.
Ah.
Yeah.
Chris Rowland, I'll say he's in the CFL for the Montreal Alouettes.
He's in North America, correct?
This is how the game works.
Chris Rowland,
not overseas.
He's in the UFL for the Michigan Panthers.
Parker does get a point. He is in the UFL, plays for the DC Defenders. He was their leading receiver last year. Is a 2025 champion in the UFL, so DC Defenders there. So Parker's up 2-1.
Attaboy, Chris. Way to represent.
Next one on the list, another baseball player, Jake McCarthy. Where is Jake McCarthy?
Who in the hell is that?
Exactly. Where are they now, baby?
I'll say he's in AAA baseball.
You want a little more information on him? He's from Scranton, PA. So
the Electric City?
The Electric City. Went to school at University of Virginia. And
Jake Lyman would be so mad at you right now.
I know, yeah. And then he was drafted by the Pirates in 2015 to the baseball draft.
Okay, I'll say he's in AAA baseball. That's MILB. You know what? Give me Rocket City Trash Pandas.
Oh.
The Angels organization.
Okay. Parker?
I'm going to say he's in AAA for Scranton-Wilkes-Barre.
Incorrect on the both of yous. He is in the MLB playing for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Oh, so close.
So, yeah.
I knew it was a team out west.
Yeah, he's 28 years old. He starts for him, so he's batting .262. Now we go to overseas. This is, I'm very excited for this.
Oh, God.
One. Yes. All right, first on the list, we have a soccer player.
Oh, God.
Let's go.
Cameron Carter-Vickers.
Who in the...
Exactly. Exactly. Where is Cameron Carter-Vickers playing today?
Oh, my God.
He's doing this on purpose.
I know.
This is the only soccer one I have. So
you know, that sounds like such a Premier League name, so I'll go. He's playing in the Premier League, which is in England.
Okay.
For Arsenal.
It does sound like it has a touch of English to it.
Vickers, score!
The only other soccer team that I know in England has to be Arsenal. That's the only one I know. I hate to copy Connor.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, all right.
Manchester? I'll go Manchester. How
There's
about
two
that?
Man. Which Manchester?
Which one's in? Is it United?
Which red or blue?
All right. Here's the deal.
Red.
I'll give you both a point because he's on loan, and he's owned by the Tottenham Hotspurs. He's been on loan for like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams. He plays in Scotland right now. He's an American player, by the way. Oh, Cameron Carter-Vickers.
Carter-Vickers.
I'll give you both a point. Parker's still up 3-2.
Oh, I need it.
Next on the list is basketball player Cam Reddish.
Everybody
knows Cam Reddish.
Duke.
Indeed. First round pick, 10th overall. Where is Cam Reddish playing currently?
Okay, Cam Reddish. He was just in the NBA, too. He's on the...
Remember, this is overseas.
Yeah, I know. He was on the New York Knicks. Former Knick. Okay. He is playing in Japan for the Nippon Chihuahuas.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
We're going intercultural with our team name today.
He's playing in France with Zakai Ziegler.
Incorrect on the both of you. He is playing in the Lithuanian Basketball League for BC Siwalali.
See, the time that it's actually Lithuania, I don't guess it.
It's always Lithuania until it's actually Lithuania and you don't get it.
Yeah.
Next one on the list, another baseball player. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Trevor Bauer. Where is Trevor Bauer playing?
I do know this.
Go ahead, Connor.
I don't know the specific team, but Trevor Bauer's playing.
We've done this one before. Oh, my gosh.
I guess I wasn't here.
Oh. Well, Trevor Bauer's playing in Mexico.
He's actually not.
What?
He's playing in the Dominican Republic.
Overseas. So
okay.
Oh, Mexico's in North America.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take my loss there.
Japan.
He is currently playing for Yokohama Bay Stars in the Nippon Professional Baseball League in Japan.
Let's go. He beat me anyway because it's only two overseas.
I have one more just for the fun
of
it.
Just for funsies?
Yeah, just for funsies.
All right.
Can you guys tell – this is a coach, by the way. Can you guys tell me the trajectory of this coach?
Oh, interesting.
Yes. All right. Starting out, was alma mater of Texas Tech University. His playing career was at Houston as a wide receiver in college. Coaching career was Sundown High School, Sweetwater High School, Hamlin High School, Georgetown High School, and then we get to college. Was a running back coach at Texas Tech, then was the coach at Houston, then Baylor, left Baylor, and went to Italy and is the coach for Estra Gelfi, a team in Florence, Italy, for the Italian Football League.
Oh, my God.
What coach is this?
I know this.
Go for it.
Art Briles.
Bingo. It is Art Briles. I love it. I love every bit of this.
It was over from the start. I
can't believe you got that one.
I know he coaches in Italy now. Yeah.
Never give him college football questions.
Yeah. Well, Art Briles is the champion of the Italy Football League in 2022. So
the Italy Football League.
Yes.
Okay. And
you get like three designated American players in that league, which is kind of cool. So you get to bring three American players over to play in Italy. It's pretty funny.
The Italy Football League. I think that's the perfect way.
They had their Super Bowl in Ohio. I don't know if you knew that or not. Yeah, they had their Super Bowl in Ohio. At Ohio
where? Ohio Stadium?
Ohio University.
Oh, yeah. Oh, even better.
Yeah.
Home of the Bobcats. Well, that'll do it for today's show. Fun show today. Enjoy college football today. Enjoy the Titans tomorrow. Reaction Monday coming up on Monday. But after this, here in about, 1 minute, Alabama and Wisconsin are going to do battle here on our college football game of the week right here on 102.5. But for Nick Frazier, for Parker Kelly, my name is Connor Newt saying goodbye. Enjoy college football today. Thanks for listening to the Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game.
See ya!